The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. This is Dean Weitzman. I'm going to be your host for the next hour as we explore some legal issues in Philadelphia and the area. You can give us a call. We're going to take your questions one at a time and we're going to try to give you the answer you need. All you got to do is give us a call at 215-227-2727. That's the number for all your legal questions. 215-227-2727. Kaboom. No kaboom. All right, Lara, you got to get the kaboom down. 215-227-2727. This is Court Radio, and this is the first Sunday in October. Sunday, October the 5th. And guess what, folks? It's getting chilly out there this morning. On my way in, I was a little nippy out and had to turn on the heat in the car for a second, just a second. But it's supposed to be a high of about 61, 62 degrees today. Sunshine, full sunshine, a beautiful fall day in Philadelphia. Come on out. But after Court Radio, 215-227-2727, we're going to take your questions. You know, the big story in the news today is that the Secret Service Director has resigned under intense pressure. Julia Pearson resigned due to some breaches in the security at the White House. And she had a congressional hearing last week, which didn't fare too well for her. And as a result, she's gone. I don't know what you think about this, but there was actually a intruder who got into the president's private family area. And some allegations that somebody shot some high-powered ammunition at the White House. No damage, nobody was injured or hurt. But it seems like a couple breaches in a row, and there's going to be a new leader for the Secret Service, the institution in government that's tasked with protecting the president and the White House. So that was unusual. But, the president has 2 years left in his presidency. And in the beginning of the presidency, there was a lot of talk about he was going to be the subject potentially of all kinds of hate crime and violence and, attempts at assassination. And he's, thank God, he's 6 years into his presidency and that hasn't happened. And we want to make sure it doesn't happen in the next 2 years. The Secret Service needs to get their act together, and do what they're paid to do, which is protect the presidency. Tell me what you think about that. 215-227-2727. We're also joined by a special guest who we're going to get right on the air right away. His name is Louis Rooley. Good morning, Lou, and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
See, the audience loves you, Louis. Lou's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania. He's in the Penn Law faculty. Lou, how long have you been doing that?
This is my 20th year.
Wow. Wow. How did you get involved in were you in private practice before you became a professor?
I was the director of community legal services.
Oh, okay. CLS. And you moved from CLS to Penn. That's a nice transition. We're here to talk about a specific thing with Lou, and that is civil forfeiture, which has been around for a long time. I remember as a young attorney in the late 80s and early 90s that the city had just begun to take property of individuals who were accused of having committed a crime, and that they obtained the property with ill-gotten gains. And it's grown from there. We used to have to file a petition in it was like a quasi-criminal civil courtroom, and we had to file a petition to get the property back. But as I said, it's grown. into its own little fiefdom in some sense. Tell us about civil forfeiture in Pennsylvania or in Philadelphia as well.
Sure. So civil forfeiture really is something that is on the minds of, I think, everyone across the nation, because it really strikes at the heart of our precious freedoms and the right to own property. The government has the right under civil forfeiture laws to bring an action, to take property on the theory that it is done wrong, even though the owner of the property has not committed a crime, has not even been accused of a crime. And perhaps even the person who was involved with any criminal activity is not found guilty.
So back in the day, if you could show that you were an innocent victim, in a sense, like the criminal activity was done by a third party, but the property was owned by you, who had nothing to do with that, that unto itself was a reason to get the property back. Not any longer?
Well, you do have defenses against civil forfeiture petitions, but I must say that the law is really stacked against ordinary citizens here for a lot of reasons. First, it's expensive to fight back. It's not easy. You have to go to court many times. There are defenses to raise. You don't have a right to counsel if you can't afford a lawyer. And if you do, that is going to cost you, and you will be able to assert defenses, but that's never clear as to whether you'll prevail. And it requires you to prove your innocence, which really flips the whole concept of our system. And I think the question for the American people, and particularly for Philadelphia, which has become such a hotspot for civil forfeiture, it's being used so aggressively in this city. Let me give you one example. The city's district attorney's office files about 6,500 petitions a year for civil forfeiture against citizens of Philadelphia. Where in Allegheny County, which includes Pittsburgh, there's only about 300 over 3 years.
Wow. An average of 100 a year in our sister city, in Pittsburgh, and in Philadelphia, 6,500 in 1 year.
That's right.
How much money does the city get from this?
Yeah, so on a yearly basis, we're talking about $5.5 million, which is about 20% of the entire budget of this district attorney's office. And what's really nefarious about civil forfeiture is that the money goes directly to law enforcement. It goes directly to the district attorney's office, the people who are bringing the petitions for civil forfeiture, rather than going to the state treasury, where there's the oversight and of the legislature for it.
Isn't that a little bit of a conflict of interest? I mean, if 20% of your budget is based on civil forfeiture, it seems like you've got a vested interest. You're really not an interest. You need to nab people's property to keep your doors open, so to speak.
Well, that's one of the major criticisms of civil forfeiture here in Philadelphia and across the country. Should law enforcement have a profit motive in what it is doing to pursue criminal fighting? And we think that that's a very serious conflict of interest.
How do you change that? I mean, what's the alternative if it's not, done the way it is now, where the very folks who are using the cash are the ones who are pursuing it?
Well, I think first, there should only be civil forfeiture after there's been a conviction of a crime by the property owner. That's number one. Number two, the money that's gotten from this should go to the state legislature, to the general treasury, and not directly to law enforcement.
But playing devil's advocate, Lou, let me just, pursue an area here. The criminals aren't dumb, and, that's debatable. But let's give them a little bit of a credit here. So they go and get a straw man or woman to stand in and be a property owner. I mean, that happens, you would think, fairly frequently. They figure this stuff out themselves. So they get Joe Schmo to come in and put his name on the property, but for all intents and purposes, it's really the drug dealer's property. And he's running an enterprise out of there, and this city wants to end it. You know, forget about the money they want to get from it. They just want to take this property away from the bad guys so that the neighborhood can get cleaned up. If we had to only take property that belonged to the criminal himself, in that case, how would we ever get that property?
Okay, I think that's a good point, and certainly there are legitimate reasons why we want to shut down any property that's being used illegally, and there's plenty of resources available to law enforcement to do that. But that's not the profile of what we're seeing in Philadelphia. We're seeing civil forfeiture petitions brought against law-abiding citizens who have never been involved with the law, have committed no crime, and perhaps their son or someone, a neighbor, is involved in the first-time offense of selling a low amount of drugs, and suddenly their property that they've paid for their entire life is now at risk of being lost. Does that make sense? Is that our system of justice, to be innocent of any criminal activity and to lose your property?
Well, you know what, Lou? That's a great question for our listeners. 215-227-2727. We got Lou Rulli here in the studio, and we're talking to Professor Rulli about civil forfeiture. Do you know folks who have had their property taken without a fight? They just snatch it. How do you get it back? What do you do? Is it fair? These are the questions we're talking to Professor Rulli about. Give us a call at 215-227-2727. But let's talk to Alva from the Northeast. Alva, good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. Thank you. This is my first time calling. I enjoy your show Sunday morning.
Thanks, Alva. You had a question or comment about the Secret Service.
Yes. I wanted to say that, in light of 9/11, you would think that they would be more diligent in doing their job, and that that everyone would be more diligent. I remember hearing the saying that they said about our country that we're like a sleeping giant. We have to be more vigilant, everybody, and especially if you're guarding the president of the United States, you have to, be more vigilant, watch, and do your job, because it makes us look bad when you're not doing your job.
Yeah, it certainly does. Do you think that's by chance that all this has been happening, or is it some sort of intentional secret plot?
If it is an intentional secret plot, then it's time out for that.
Yeah.
Because we need to come together as a nation, as a country, because we are fighting too many enemies across foreign waters to be an enemy within.
You've got that right. All right, Alva, thanks for giving us a call at Court Radio, and have a great Sunday. And keep on listening.
Okay.
215-227-2727. They named a new interim chief of the Secret Service, Joe Clancy, and Joe takes office immediately. So there you go. Let's talk to Sabrina let's talk to Sabrina about civil forfeiture. Sabrina, welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I don't think that it's fair that someone should lose their property that they worked hard for because they know someone who's been incarcerated for, drugs or affiliated with someone. That shouldn't automatically mean that they are involved and they should lose their property.
Yeah. So you, at a minimum, you're thinking that somebody needs to be involved in the criminal enterprise in order to lose their property, which Professor Rulli tells us isn't the case. I couldn't agree more with you. I think you have to be involved, and as a straw person that, I painted a scenario when we started, and I'm thinking now as I say it, that person's involved. I mean, they're a co-conspirator in the enterprise of distribution of drugs. So, charge them with conspiracy.
Where's the line at? Where's the line?
Where's the line? Well, if you don't live at a house and you say to your buddy who's selling drugs, hey, I'll put the house in my name. I live away from there and I got nothing to do with it. But if you need somebody to put whose name you need to put on the deed, you can use mine. Obviously,
That's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
It is a gray area, but in my scenario, at least, we force the district attorney to prove that allegation, and as opposed to just snatching the property. All right. Thanks for giving us a call. Go
Thank
back
you.
To your
Have
drive.
A good day.
All right. You too. 215-227-2727. We got another civil forfeiture question, Professor Rooley. Let's talk to Joe from Northeast Philly. Hey, Joe. Welcome to Court Radio.
Hey. Good morning. Thank you for this information here. This is crucial. I was not aware of this matter here. But my question is this. So when they take that property, do they just sell it to anybody in Philadelphia? How does that work?
Well, that's a great question. Let's see what the professor has to say, Joe.
Yes, for real property, Joe, the district attorney takes the property, it's forfeited, and then it is sold twice a year at public auctions. And it brings in, you know, for a small amount, doesn't match the value of the property that it really cost. And as a result, the property owner has lost it, and someone can buy it at a low value.
Now, let me ask you something, Professor. Well, how long does the city hold it? Is there a set amount of time before it goes to sale?
The law doesn't require that it go to sale at any particular time, and so the district attorney can hold it for years, or they can try to get rid of it quickly.
So wait, if they seize the property a month before the upcoming sale, and they want to put it on sale for that sale, can they do that?
Well, that may not be enough time in order for the public auction procedure to take place. But again, it's twice a year, so within 6 months, they could put it up for sale.
What does one need to do to get their property back?
So, number one, I strongly recommend you get a lawyer. And it's so critical to raise all of the defenses that you have, because these cases can be hotly contested and you can lose your property. You can lose your home, you can lose your cash, and you can lose your cars. And that's what's happening in Philadelphia. It's one of the hot spots across the country. It's one of the most aggressive areas of the use of civil forfeiture. And you're going to need legal help because it is complex. You've got constitutional defenses, you've got statutory defenses, and if you don't raise them in the pleadings, you will waive them, and you won't be permitted to raise them at the time of the hearing.
You mentioned homes and automobiles and cash. Now, that's an interesting concept here. I'm driving around, and I don't like banks, okay? So I keep, you know, pretty much the cash I have in my life in my pocket. I've got $3,000 in my pocket, and I'm driving around, and I get stopped for a traffic citation. I blew a red light. Cop asks me out of the car, and he searches, and lo and behold, he finds my cash. Can he take that right then and there?
Well, yes, they can seize cash if they believe that it is either the proceeds of an illegal offense. And by the way, if any drugs are found in that car, cash that's in proximity to drugs will be presumed to be drug money. So therefore, yes, they can seize it, and they can then bring a petition to forfeit it.
Even if I have just a small amount of marijuana, I mean, a couple of joints in my pocket from my daily smoke, and I've got some cash sitting next to it, that's it?
The irony of all of this is that at a time when we're decriminalizing marijuana, we're stepping up civil forfeiture enforcement and taking property of innocent citizens.
Ay, ay, ay. Let's talk to Lee from Atco, New Jersey. Hey, Lee, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning.
You got a question about civil forfeiture or a comment?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, like, okay, you were talking about the straw purchases. If my cousin comes to me and asks me to put some property in my name, and I know quite well he doesn't have a job and he doesn't work anywhere, and I just think the straw purchaser should be held responsible too.
Okay. I mean, listen, you know, that I don't know that we're saying he or she shouldn't be responsible, but what we're saying is, or at least I'm beginning to be co-opted by the professor, you know, he has that way. But what he's saying is you should be prosecuted for your conspiracy and then have
right.
your property taken rather
right.
than have your property taken without ever having to be prosecuted.
Right, because they know full well what they're doing. It's the same thing as if I was to buy buy somebody a gun and put it in my name, and they go out there and use that gun. I'm held responsible for that gun just as well as they are. Same with the property, same with automobiles, cars. That's just what how I feel about the situation.
Thank you, and Lee, take care and have a great day in ATCO.
You too.
215-227-2727. We're going to take a quick break. We're coming back with Professor Louis Rooley, and we're talking about civil forfeiture, the government snatching your property, and they don't have to answer to you unless you hire an attorney and pursue them. We'll be right back.
If you have legal problems and need answers, call my Philly lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first at 215-227-2727 for personal injury, medical malpractice, birth injury, and more. Call Dean first.
He will fight for your rights. That's what Dean Weitzman is all about.
Call my Philly lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first. 215-227-2727. My Philly lawyer, when winning matters most. It's a legal and financial squeeze. You're unable to work because of an accident, but your legal case is still not settled, so you can't pay the bills to take care of your family. But now, thanks to U.S. Claims, you can. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 1-877-US-CLAIMS. While you're waiting for your settlement, U.S. Claims can help you pay the bills. Get out of the squeeze. Call 1-877-US-CLAIMS today. For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome back to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman and this is the place you get your legal questions answered. 215-227-2727. And if for some reason you don't get to come on to Court Radio today, you can always reach us and my team all week long at that number, 215-227-2727. You know My Philly Lawyer, we're here for you. Let's talk to Joe from North Philly, who's got a civil forfeiture question for Lou. Hey, Joe, welcome to Court Radio.
Yes, good morning. The question that I have is this. The forfeiture law, is it a state law or a city law? And what can we do as a citizen of Philadelphia to change those laws?
Okay, great question.
It really is a great question. So it is a state law. It's a Pennsylvania law. And so you can contact your state representatives and your state senators and say there ought to be hearings on this. There ought to be reports generated about this. And ultimately, the law should change.
You said it's a state law, but it seems to be enforced in Philly at an alarming rate. Why? Why Philadelphia as opposed to anywhere else in the Commonwealth?
Not only in comparison to the Commonwealth, but really across the nation. And so people are asking, why in Philadelphia, the cradle of our democracy, why is civil forfeiture being used so heavily? And by comparison, you know, in Brooklyn or in Los Angeles, which are larger than Philadelphia, you don't see this aggressive use of civil forfeiture against ordinary citizens. So the district attorney has to answer that question. Is it the for-profit motive that's involved? Is it that there's just too much money to be made from civil forfeiture? It's a very serious question, and it's one for the state legislature to look into as well.
Is it also because we have more crime in Philadelphia than anywhere else in the nation?
Well, we do, as any urban area, have our share of crime and of drug use. There's no question. But that's why I gave the example of Brooklyn and Los Angeles County, because they, too, have similar problems, but nowhere near the levels of civil forfeiture that we have.
All right. Let's talk to Jeannie from Bucks County, who's got a question. Good morning and welcome to Court Radio.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Good morning. Okay, great. I love your show.
Thank you.
It's very informative. I catch it on my way home from work on Sunday. But this is my question, simple question for you. Say there's a situation of a little old lady, maybe even with a little bit of dementia, a grandma, and some ne'er-do-well grandson, great-grandson, or whatever, comes and stays at her house, and there's some suspicion of some drug activity by that younger person. And the grandmother isn't really aware of what's going on. Is she at risk if they get in trouble?
There you go. That's a great question. And who knew that today, this morning, I would hear ne'er-do-well? But I appreciate that, and we're going to get Lou to answer. We're going to get Lou to answer your question. Go ahead, Lou. Give your best shot.
Yeah, no, I think that is a great question, because that's exactly the profile we see over and over again. We see grandparents losing their property or at risk of losing their property because of maybe a grandson who they've taken in and is allegedly involved in low-level drug activity. We have had situations where elderly folks are battling very serious health problems and clearly are not involved with any criminal activity, never accused of any criminal activity, and yet they have to defend against the loss of their property. Unfortunately, many people just give up and they lose their property because they either don't have access to lawyers, they can't afford lawyers, or they don't know what to do. And that's why it's so important that the public know about this and that they be willing to stand up and defend against these petitions when they're brought.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, thank you.
Have a great Sunday. Give us a call again.
Thank
215.
You too.
All right, 215-227-2727. Lou, what's a hearing look like for civil forfeiture? I mean, what should people expect when they go into court?
Well, first they'll be told to go to room 478 of City Hall, and that really is just an administrative courtroom. There's no judge there. There is a trial commissioner that kind of manages the cases. And they'll be required to come back multiple times. The district attorney will give them what's called interrogatories, questions under oath that they will have to answer about the property, about what happened in the seizure. And so it's going to involve multiple times back to court. And ultimately, if the district attorney's not willing to work with the parties involved, they'll have to go to a hearing at the Criminal Justice Center in courtroom 504, and they'll have to be able to present their case. But if they haven't preserved their defenses, their innocent owner defense, their constitutional Eighth Amendment, excessive fine defense, they will lose those defenses and not be able to raise them at a hearing, and therefore they will really subject their property to risk of loss.
Can witnesses come testify on behalf of the property owners?
Absolutely. The homeowner can bring witnesses, and you can be sure that the district attorney is going to call police officers and any witnesses they may have to present their case.
Right. And so I would imagine that a typical hearing would look like maybe a neighbor coming out saying, yeah, they've been selling drugs out of that house for months and we've wanted to clean up the neighborhood, or an officer might come out and say that he staked out the house for, you know, several months as they watched people come and go and buy and sell drugs through the house, things of that nature.
Well, you're right that police officers will testify, and that it's usually they've over maybe 3 days, 4 days, they've seen sales in the neighborhood, on the block, and maybe on the porch, for example, of this particular house. And as a result, they are trying to seize the house again, even though the owner is not charged with any criminal activity and doesn't, frankly, know that this is going on.
Okay. Now, the thing is that, you know, and you said it at the top of the show, but worth repeating, it kind of puts the whole idea that, you know, what we have is ours on its head, because it puts the burden on us to prove that we legitimately own something. And that something might be cash. That something might be a motor vehicle. We have to be able to prove we own it. We legitimately own it. And if we can't prove that, we lose it.
That's right. It flips it exactly the opposite way. In a criminal matter, you know, the state has to have the burden of proving the guilt of the person they accuse. And they have to do that beyond a reasonable doubt, which is a very high standard. And we require that standard because of the serious consequences. But in civil forfeiture, the burden's on the individual, the property owner. And the burden that the government has is a very low burden of merely a preponderance of the evidence, and therefore much easier for the government to prevail. And unlike criminal matters where you have a right to counsel if you can't afford a lawyer, in a civil forfeiture matter, you have no right to counsel unless you can afford one on your behalf.
There you go. 215-227-2727. I'm bringing on our friend David Noble, who's a listener of Court Radio and has been. Hey, David, welcome to Court Radio. Oh, David. He's hiding.
Hello.
David.
Yes.
How are you, bud?
All right. How are you, Mr. Weissman?
I'm well, thanks. Good morning. You've woken up for Court Radio again.
Yes.
You know, I have a question for you, Dave. David, we're going to let people know, has become a client of Dean Weitzman and of My Philly Lawyer, right?
Yes, I have.
And you had an automobile accident a little while ago.
Yes.
Several months. And you took a couple months and you finally got into the office. And I just had a question to ask you. You listen to Court Radio, and I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't want to lead you, okay? But would you say that Court Radio has been helpful and that you find the information you learn here to be helpful and right on the point?
Yes, always. It's like a ritual to listen to you every Sunday.
All right. So now with all of that, those good feelings, I never hurt your feelings, right? I never threw you off the show or anything like that, right?
No.
Okay. So now I said to you, David, what happened? Why wouldn't you come and call me as soon as the accident happened? You know, you get home, you kind of get yourself together, and the very first call is to Dean. You say, hey, let me give Dean a call and see what's going on here so I can protect my rights. But you didn't do that. Why?
Well, I was always told since I started driving, you have an accident, you should call the insurance company and report it to the insurance company.
How'd that work out for you, David?
It's been over 2 months, and I haven't heard anything about my vehicle being totaled, people giving me a runaround. It's just been horrible.
So you've been trying to go it alone for 2 months. Listen, I mean, your intent seems to be good. It's just that it doesn't work. And I just want people to understand that when you have an accident, insurance companies kind of have the deck stacked against you. They've got all the experience, and they have a vested interest in minimizing your claim. Okay? And so you're never going to get a fair shake with an insurance company without having representation. You know, you just can't take that chance. You proved it again to me. Here you are, nice guy. You present your claim to the insurance company. You think that they made you believe in the beginning that they're there to help you, yes?
Yes. They always made me, they was talking nice to me. Oh, don't worry, Mr. Nobles, we're going to take care of everything. And like I said, again, it's been over 2 months, and I still have a total vehicle.
All right. So you came to us last week, and we took your claim, we signed you up, and now we're going to make sure that they give you what you're entitled to. If we have to pursue them in litigation, we'll do it. We'll do whatever needs to be done to protect David and your rights. And so I just want to let people know, listen, when you got a claim, give us a call first, because we are here to help you, and we're not here. We work on a contingent fee basis. That means that if we don't make a recovery for you, there's no fee. So there's absolutely no reason why you wouldn't start with 215-227-2727. I'm saying that because I want my listeners at Court Radio to be protected. And if you're not going to call us, call somebody. But don't go it alone. All right, David Nobles, I thank you for waking up again on Court Radio. Have a great Sunday. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, Dean. And if I can just say one thing to all the listeners, please, please call the lawyer office first.
Thanks, David. That only came from hard-earned experience. Thank you. Have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye.
215-227-2727. It was a plug of sorts, but I got to tell you, Lou, it really hurts when clients, they know better. They should know better. They've been listening to Court Radio. Don't try to deal with, folks who have a lot more cards in their deck than you do. And a lot of times people are just caught off guard. They just think, they'll take care of me. And it kind of, to segue back to our civil forfeiture, I own a property. I got nothing to do with the criminal activity. I'm certain they're going to give me my property back, right?
Wrong. And so, this really is a good segue because, Congress has looked at civil forfeiture and has held hearings and been concerned about the high default rate. The fact that people are not fighting back and they're not getting lawyers and they're losing their property. Sometimes it's just not economically feasible to get back your property. Let me give you an example. Let's take the cash. Let's say that they seize $400, $500 that you have, and you're not guilty of anything. How much is it going to cost you to get back that $500? A lot of people are giving up. That isn't right. That shouldn't happen.
Even a couple days of wages back and forth to the courtroom is going to eat up the $400. And, the truth of the matter is that if you don't have the time to take from work and you got to go two or three times to the courtroom to do it, you could lose your job.
That's absolutely right. And, in fact, the studies now show that you have to return to the courtroom a minimum of five times before bringing these to resolutions. So
yeah.
It's expensive. It's something that needs a definite reform, and I hope that the public will get involved and start contacting their state legislature about it.
We have a lot of politicians, march through Court Radio on a regular basis, and I'm definitely going to bring this up with some of them the next time they're here. But right now there's some litigation going on in a bigger scale than the individual claims. Tell us about that.
Yes, recently there was federal litigation brought here in Philadelphia by the Institute for Justice. They're proposing it as a class action to represent all folks who are involved here as property owners in civil forfeiture. And the idea is to really challenge under the Constitution whether or not the policies and practices of the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office are constitutional in compliance with the law.
So if this class gets certified, they're actually examining the law itself and to determine its constitutionality.
Well, it's more an attack on the practices of the district attorney's office as opposed to a frontal attack on the law itself. Let me give you an example. The district attorney's office is bringing forfeiture petitions against real property, people's homes, and they're putting people out of their homes before there's even a hearing. And so that raises a real question of whether or not that complies with due process of law. Should you be put out of your house before you even have an opportunity to go in front of a judge?
Before you go before a judge, that you're out. You have to find another house to live in before there's even one word out of your mouth in defense of your own home.
Exactly.
Aye, that sounds draconian. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Lou Rulli. We're talking about the government and in particular, the District Attorney's Office of Philadelphia, snatching your property before you've had a chance to even claim it's yours.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident? With your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If you have legal problems and need answers, call My Philly Lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first at 215-227-2727 for personal injury, medical malpractice, birth injury, and more. Call Dean first.
He will fight for your rights. That's what Dean Weitzman is all about.
Call My Philly Lawyer, Dean Weitzman, first. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most. It's a legal and financial squeeze. You're unable to work because of an accident, but your legal case is still not settled, so you can't pay the bills to take care of your family. But now, thanks to U.S. Claims, you can. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 1-877-US-CLAIMS. While you're waiting for your settlement, U.S. Claims can help you pay the bills. Get out of the squeeze. Call 1-877-US-CLAIMS today. For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia.
The following is a paid program brought to you by My Philly Lawyer. The views and opinions expressed are those of the sponsor and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the station and its management.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning. And welcome back. It's Court Radio, and I'm Dean Weitzman. And I'm joined in the studio today by Professor Louis Rooley from University of Pennsylvania School of Law. Lou, welcome back to Court Radio.
Thank you.
And Lou and I are talking about civil forfeiture. That's the act of the government taking your property, whether it's a car or a house or a boat or a wave runner or cash, you name it. Just about anything that has any value at all, the government can take. And then you've got to prove it's yours and it was legitimately purchased and not used with your knowledge in a criminal enterprise. You've got all that burden on your shoulders to prove all that. And it takes, sounds like it takes months and months, Lou. How long? I mean, what's the average time before somebody gets their property back?
You know, it's hard to say exactly, but I would say it's certainly 6 months. I've had cases that have been 2 years. And so it takes a long time.
Lord have mercy. Let's talk to Mark from Woodland, New Jersey, who's got a car accident issue. Mark, welcome to Court Radio.
Hello.
Hello, Mark. You're on the air. What's your question?
I had a car accident. A guy hit me. And after he hit me, he ran up and made a drug purchase. And then the police came. And when the police came, they seen where the accident was, but his car was 50 feet ahead of me, and insurance isn't going to pay for either one of our cars.
Okay. Well, I mean, that happens. And the question I have for you is, when did it happen?
About 2 months ago.
Okay. And did you ever seek or obtain representation by an attorney for the accident?
No, actually, I just heard you talk to the guy on the radio. Why did he wait? And I said, wow, that's me.
Yeah.
So I called you.
All right. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. I've got to get information from you. I've got to get the facts of the claim. I've got to find out some things, and I'm going to do that tomorrow. So you're going to call the same number you called today for Court Radio tomorrow, 215-227-2727. And I or somebody from my team will get some information from you, and we may bring you in to get you signed up. We will listen to your case. We will give you some advice, and perhaps we'll be representing you. You should. You're the prototypical client. You need to call when it happens because your rights need to be protected. And if insurance companies always did what they were supposed to do and they paid clients the amount of money they were entitled to be paid, we wouldn't need to have attorneys, but it doesn't happen that way. Insurance companies, just like the district attorney's office, have profit margin as their primary concern, not your welfare. And so they're looking to do things so that they can pay their shareholders, not Mark. So give us a call tomorrow, Mark, and we're going to take care of you, and we'll give you some advice and perhaps representation.
I actually need to call you Tuesday morning because I'm working tomorrow.
All right. No problem. Give us a call Tuesday. We're here for you 24/7. Thanks, Mark, for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
All right. Let's talk to Gloria from Camp. Gloria is gone. Okay. We got Michael from West Philly on Civil Forfeiture Line 5. Michael, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm a regular listener.
There you go.
Hey, this is about the government still. I talked to you guys about 4 years ago about a case that I had in 1979 where I had a vehicular homicide. And you told me I couldn't get it expunged, but I had to get it pardoned. I did this before our previous government. It's been in for 4 years, and I got denied. I'm about 63 now, and I can't ever purchase anything of any legal passport or anything. Do you handle this kind of case, or what should I do next?
Well, pardons are not something we typically handle. However, certainly give us a call. And if we, there's a lot of times when we don't handle a particular area of the law because you can't be great at everything. And so what we do is, though, we know other attorneys who are working in particular areas, and we'll try to help Court Radio listeners get affiliated with the attorneys who really focus their practice on one particular area of the law. And so you're looking for a pardon, and you've already gone through 4 years on, I presume, on your own.
And, correct.
Yeah, so I'm not sure there's anything could be done, but it's certainly worth having a conversation with somebody who is an expert in that area, and we will help you find somebody. Give us a call during the week, 215-227-2727. And one other thing, sometimes it's easier to communicate with me, occasionally, by email. And so you can always reach me also at Dean, D-E-A-N, at myphillylawyer.com. It's an easy way to get me. That way I can address your issue when I have time to focus on it. And, you know, when you call, it may not be a great time for me. So when I get an email, that's something I can always circle back to later in the day and get you an answer. So if you can't reach me by phone, you can always reach me by email, Dean at myphillylawyer.com. We'll get you in and we'll get you an answer. Thanks for listening. Thanks for continuing
Thanks very much.
All right. 215-227-2727. Let's talk to Lucille. Got a question for Lou, West Philly.
Hello.
Lucille. Hey, Lucille.
Hello.
Welcome to Court Radio.
Hello?
Hello. We hear you.
Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Oh, I didn't know because I couldn't hear you. I have a question for Mr. Rui.
Yes.
I had purchased a house when my husband died for my kids. And somehow my grandson came from another part of the city, still southwest Philadelphia, and he had hidden some money and some drugs in the house. So, of course, the house was up for forfeiture. But, of course, I had an attorney also. And about four years for me to get this house saved because there was a law on the books at that time that the Supreme Court had ruled that if what they found in the house was not valued as the property of the house, it could not be taken.
If the value of the proper, if the drugs and cash weren't greater than the value of the house itself, they couldn't take your house. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, let's see if Lou agrees with you. Thanks for listening, Lucille, and have a great Sunday.
There's nothing, Lucille, in the law that says that the value of the drugs has to be a certain amount in comparison to the value of the house. But I think what you're referring to is the what's known as an Eighth Amendment constitutional defense of excessive fine. And what that is if the taking is totally disproportionate to the gravity of the offense.
So let's give people real examples. So they snatch an ounce of marijuana valued at, $400, and they have a few hundred dollars in cash. So the total is $700, but the house is a $100,000 house. What happens then?
Well, we would assert an excessive fine defense. And, of course, it would be up to the court to determine under the law whether or not it would be excessive to take the house for that small amount of drug activity.
Is there any guidance in the law right now as to what would be deemed excessive?
One of the really hard areas is this Eighth Amendment defense, because the Supreme Court has not established well what the law is here. And so it's on a case-by-case basis as we try to develop the law. There is a presumption that if the fine on the underlying offense is the amount of or larger than the value of the property, it's not excessive. And so I will tell you that the fine for many of the drug offenses we're talking about is a $200,000 potential fine. That isn't necessarily what the court gives out, but under the law is a potential fine. And therefore, if the value of your house is below that, it's often presumed by the courts not to be excessive. We think that's wrong in the application of the Eighth Amendment, but that is something that requires a lawyer to help you with.
Let's talk to Vicki from Jenkintown, who's got a question for you, Lou. Vicki, welcome to Court Radio.
Hi. What? I have a question, and good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. The question is, that law, the new law where you can have small amounts of marijuana, is that statewide? That's statewide, right?
No.
Just for Philadelphia.
Yes, it is. For Philadelphia.
Philadelphia County, so we're not talking Montgomery County.
Jenkintown would not be exempt from that law. Jenkintown, if you're caught with even one joint in Jenkintown, they can prosecute you to the full extent of the law. It's not a summary offense in Jenkintown. But in Philadelphia, now you just drive a little bit, down 611, and you cross over into Philly with that same joint, and you're going to get a traffic ticket, essentially.
Oh, my goodness. So, okay. What about people who have who smoke in their own home, privacy of their own home?
Yeah, well,
let's say a cop just happened by, maybe for some other reason, and they smelled the marijuana. Can you get in trouble?
That's a big joint, you know. If they could smell the pot coming out of your house, you're like smoking one of those giant like cigar joint or something. I don't know, but the answer is that if they have probable cause to suspect that criminal activity is occurring, they can enter the home and would arrest you even in the privacy of your own home. Again, in Philadelphia County, it's a traffic ticket, essentially. In anywhere else in the Commonwealth right now, and you know this is moving in the right direction of decriminalization, but it isn't there yet, and you don't want to be a guinea pig for getting that, law brought into Montgomery County, because it isn't there yet.
Okay. As for forfeiture, then, so I'm going back to the question about the little old lady in the house. Grandma, whatever, she could lose her property. Though, let's say the person who was in there smoking, and maybe the cop only smelled it because he came to the door for some reason, wouldn't have smelled it otherwise. Could she lose her house because of that? Because some kid or somebody is in there smoking?
I don't know, Lou. What do you think?
Well, she is at risk under the law, but it's really only prosecuted for a drug transaction. So in other words, right, as opposed to a mere possession. But under the law, you have to be careful. It's any violation of the controlled substance law. So,
And that's why they're doing this in Philadelphia so much. I have a question. In these other jurisdictions where they have the civil forfeiture and other states, do the proceeds go to law enforcement as well, or it goes to other things?
In most of the states, it does go to law enforcement. Some states have begun to change the law in that area, and it either goes for a public purpose, like public education, or it goes to the state treasury, where it's then part of the budget process.
All right. I hope we answered your questions, Vicki. Have a great Sunday up in Jenkintown. No more smoking. 215-227-2727. That's the place to go. Kimball, Southwest Philly. We haven't heard from Southwest today. Good morning. Welcome to Court Radio.
Yes, how you doing?
Good. How about you? What's happening?
I'm good. I just need some information about an incident.
Go ahead.
Okay, I had an accident, it was like April 1913. I gave my truck to a collision place to redo it. And with that happened, I told the guy that's going to fix us, I need to do a part. He said, okay, but I got to thank the insurance people. I said, but I need a deal apart. I don't care about the thunders and doors. I need the inside to be because I got to protect the warranty. And what you don't put that back in there, I lose my thing. So he went pursued the work. And after that, it was like I never drove it because they had a recall on the 2010 vehicle there on that tie rod. So they had me waiting like 7 months. So I never got the chance to drive the truck because it was down for 7 months. Then when they fixed up car, then I decided to drive the truck. And then when I drive it, the brakes was contaminated. They said the brake fluid was contaminated, but it didn't dawn on me that when the accident, I didn't have this problem until this accident. How did I contaminate my brakes? So the dealer said, your brakes are contaminated. So that voided my standard warranty again. So I'm like, who could do this unless it was the dealer? They don't want to service my vehicle. But I had broke down another store was. I went there to have it diagnosed, and they said the same thing, but I didn't take their word, so I took a second opinion. Had it towed down to the dealer.
Is it? This is like one of those four-part questions, but I'm going to get right to it and tell you that there's a couple things I'd be concerned about. One is the statute of limitations. You've got a 2-year statute of limitations on accidents. Ultimately, if you can trace back what's wrong with your truck to that accident, you believe or somebody can prove that whatever you're claiming is wrong stems from the accident, then ultimately the person who caused the accident would be responsible. But again, remember that it's only a 2-year statute of limitations. And so you want to make sure that you get this heard quickly if you want to pursue it. Otherwise, if you think that it's something that the person who was tasked with fixing your car did, and you can prove that, then that would be a breach of a contract, perhaps. And it could be more than 2 years. It could be a 4-year statute of limitations. But you're talking about, I think you said that the accident happened or the repair happened in 2013. At first, I thought you said 1913, but I definitely think you mean the April 19th of 2013, but you just the way you phrased it was not clear. But I think you have plenty of time, but again, that my concern is the statute because you let the truck sit for a few months, et cetera, et cetera. On these smaller cases, and I'm going to have to get off, it may not even be worth getting an attorney involved. And again, to segue back to you, Lou, when you have a small auto accident where it's just property damage and it's a few hundred dollars or a couple thousand dollars, you really can't afford to hire an attorney to handle that. We work on a contingent fee, but we're working usually when it's an unknown amount. There's a bodily injuries and we're pursuing the bodily injury claim. We tack on property damage. But if it's property damage only and a couple $1,000, we're not getting involved. We can. It's not enough money there to justify it. Same with you. When there's only a couple $1,000 of civil forfeiture, not enough money to justify it. People really are forced to go it alone then.
They really are. One thing is we have a clinic at the University of Pennsylvania Law School that provides free legal services in smaller cases like that.
How do they get in touch with you?
And they can certainly call our office, 215-898-8427.
One more time, because you took them by surprise. Yeah. So to give them the number again. If you've got a smaller civil forfeiture case, one where you really can't afford to retain an attorney, you can get in touch with Lou and his folks, and they're going to help you get representation even on smaller claims. And they're going to call you, Lou, where?
You can call to the Penn Clinics at 215-898-8427. Now, we can only provide free legal services to those who are financially eligible, but we'll try to hook you up, and if we're not able to assist you, with others in the city that may be able to help you.
Lou, I want to thank you for coming on to Court Radio today. It's been a pleasure to have you. This has been a great topic, an interesting topic, and I think one that touches far too many Philadelphians. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks so much for tackling this topic.
All right, folks, next week we're going to have Irina Shiloh. We're doing domestic relations. If you've got custody issues, child support, divorce, give us a call next week. Same place, same time. Have a great Sunday.
The preceding was a paid program of MyPhillyLawyer.com.